Now, one of the big problems, and again, something that many people aren't even aware of in the slightest, is that not only are a number of files still withheld, there's roughly about 1,000 CIA files withheld, and we don't know how lengthy each of those files are. You know, if each file was 500 pages long, and you're talking about 1,000 files, when you still see then it's a lot of material. But one of the other problems is that we can actually prove many potentially crucial documents on the Kennedy assassination were actually destroyed decades ago. I mean, I talk about a number of these in the book, but one classic and perfect example is Lee Harvey Oswald's Army Intelligence File. Now, while I do personally believe there was a conspiracy at the heart of the Kennedy assassination, I don't think that Oswald was just an innocent patsy as he portrayed himself. I think he was set up to be the lone gunman, but I think he was involved and he knew he was there to act, play a particular role, but I don't think he obviously realized he was going to be set up to be the fall guy. Now, what's interesting is that back in 1973, Oswald's Army Intelligence File was actually destroyed. And the circumstances under which it was destroyed are actually still questionable to this day as to on whose authority it was undertaken, who actually destroyed the file, and under what circumstances it was destroyed. Now,
have you got any answers on that?
What happened was that in the 70s, the House Senate Committee on Assassinations, which looked at reopened the Kennedy assassination case and came to a completely different conclusion to the Warren Commission, the HSCA concluded there was a conspiracy. And they actually petitioned for Oswald's Army Intelligence File. And the Army got back to them and said that, well, sorry, we're not able to send you the file because it was destroyed in 1973. And as I said, the circumstances and who gave the order, that's still very much a grey area. Now, of course, we'll never really know what was in that file today, but I think it's safe to say that an Army intelligence file on Lee Harvey Oswald, who, you know, had links with the military, who had links with a lot of shadowy characters in New Orleans, who went to Russia and came back, surely that Army intelligence file would have contained a lot of crucial information that would have shed more light on his activities and his character and what he may have been up to. So that's one of the big problems. It's not so much just trying to get hold of the files that are still classified. It's having to deal with the fact that really significant files from years ago were destroyed years ago. We'll never know today, what was contained in that material. It's just, for all intents and purposes, that piece of history has been wiped out.
You haven't even been able to figure out or get even a clue as to who actually ordered the destruction of these files?
No, the response that the House Committee, the Senate Committee on Assassinations got was that when the military went looking, they could not find the paperwork that showed who actually gave the order and who actually carried out the destruction and how the files were destroyed or where they were even destroyed. All of these issues are either grey issues or conflicting issues. It's never been sort of satisfactorily resolved at an official level.
Who or what group or whatever could put together an obfuscation program like this just to muddy the water and nobody can find anything? I mean, you can't even find out who was responsible for getting rid of the files. Do you have an idea?
No, unfortunately, we have no idea. What's kind of sort of eerily weird is that that's exactly the same with the Roswell files from 47 that are missing. It's not just that the files are missing, but almost identically as with the Lee Harvey Oswald file, that whoever gave the order for the destruction or the removal of the Roswell files, that hasn't been shown or proved either. Again, something else where the files are gone, but we don't know who gave the order or whether they were destroyed or pulled. You know, that's a big problem.
We were talking with a fellow who I have the most high regards for as a reporter, writer, author, reality-based, John Rothrock, Well, I guess we could say it's reality-based, even though you deal with paranormal and other things as well. Nick Redfern, and his new book is Not for Anyone's Eyes, or I think I screwed up the title that time. I don't know how I could. Did I get it right, Nick?
For Nobody's Eyes Only, that's, yeah.
Okay, you're right. Okay. So busy bragging on you, I lost where I was. Now, tell me a little bit more, if you can, about something that jumped out at you this time around when you looked at the JFK files. And the whole story. I mean, you've visited it many times, I know, haven't you?
So you broke up a bit then. Have I looked into the files, did you say?
Yeah. So you just don't know, there was nothing that really jumped out from you on your research or anything you read by anybody else. I think it gives you an idea. I mean, the thing I always thought was mysterious is the autopsy pictures being burned at the fireplace. Is that story true? Have you heard about that from the Bethesda Naval Hospital?
Oh, yeah. Never mind the sort of the documents, the photo angle as well, you know, and missing photographs allegedly and altered and doctored photographs. That's an interesting angle. I want to talk about in the book, for example, where there was supposedly like a military intelligence presence at Dealey Plaza on the day before the assassination, taking photographs, and those pictures have never surfaced at all either. So, like the documents, a lot of the pictures that should exist, they've gone as well.
Do you think that these are different groups operating and keeping things secret, or are they all part of one big group? Of course, we don't have any yet.
Actually, that's a very good question, because I think it actually is several different competing groups. And I kind of find that not just with the JFK assassination, but also particularly with the UFO mystery as well. That's to say, I think when we look at the people who've spoken about the UFO subject at an official level or the Kennedy assassination, it's almost like there are competing factions where some of the people on the inside want the story to come out and others don't. You know, I think there's often a tendency for those of us on the outside to think that there's always this sort of unified belief or, you know, sort of situation where everybody on the inside is of one mindset. You know, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to keep hidden, this is what we're going to tell people. And in fact, I don't think it is like that at all. I think there are people, particularly with the UFO subject, on the inside who really want the information to come out, but, you know, they have no way for it to surface. You know, we're not able to get it sort of through the Freedom Information Act, so this makes it very difficult. But, yeah, I think we're sort of dealing with sort of conflicting factions and groups in the same way that, you know, in the UFO community we don't agree on everything. I think that's exactly the same on the inside as well. And I think probably they don't always share information with each other. Again, you know, you think that if one group has something on Roswell, they might be sharing it with another sort of deeply buried UFO-based group. But if that other group sort of got a different agenda, they may be out of the loop, you know. And people don't often realize that agencies in governments all around the world, not, you know, just in this country or that country, hide information not just from the public or the media, but from competing agencies as well. You know, that's how it works.
It's true. You, in this book, also cover some other subjects that I'd like to kind of go over with you. One of those things is evidently there's some missing information or data on the Watergate files. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Watergate is, one of these, I suppose, one of the ultimate sort of 1970s era conspiracies, you know, the whole issue of President Nixon, bugging the White House and, you know, spying on the the Democrats and so on. And you know, it was a major scandal that essentially led to the downfall and resignation of President Kennedy, excuse me, President Nixon. And so certainly without doubt, you know, one of the major events in sort of 20th century American history. But yeah, we're sort of lacking various materials as it relates to Watergate. And certainly one of the most interesting ones I talk about in the book was sort of an 18-minute or so telephone conversation that had been recorded between President Nixon and someone who many people believe was one of the people linked to the White House slash Watergate conspiracy. And this particular recording has become infamous because nobody doubts the recording existed, but it was allegedly mistakenly recorded over by Nixon's secretary.
Rosemary Woods took the blame for that, the secretary.
Yeah, that's right. She felt she was almost like the fall guy or the fall girl, so to speak. And the story was that she was sat at her desk and a call came in and she leaned over in one direction to record the call, and then inadvertently with her other hand deleted the conversation, the original conversation. But when the official world sort of dug into it, when they were looking into the Watergate saga, they found to actually achieve that, to tape the one call and listen to the conversation, delete the other all at the same time, you know, you'd have to be almost like an acrobat to stretch across the room in the fashion that she said she did. So this seems to have been like well, the official conclusion was that it had been wiped. There's no doubt it had been wiped. And there was a great deal of suspicion on those part of those that looked into it that it had been wiped deliberately to avoid implicating Nixon. And that was the conclusion of not just certain players who were writing about and researching the Watergate saga, but people who are actually involved in the official investigation. You know, they simply did not buy the story that Nixon's secretary was telling. And yet, to her credit, you know, she stood by it to her dying day. She said, no, that's what happened, and that's the way it played out. And what's interesting, though, is that a committee was actually created to study that recording, and they tried with the technology that was around at that time to see if they could actually clean it up somehow and sort of remaster the original recording, but it was gone. You know, there was just no chance, unfortunately.
A lot of things missing that I would love to know, and I'm sure most people would love to know. It makes you wonder what's being hidden from us today. Evidently, it's still about the same volume of secrets, in my opinion, that we've always had. I mean, it seems like we've been a secret society in many ways.
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the important things. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, I mean, history as we know it certainly isn't the full story. I mean, you know, when we talk about Roswell being sort of almost 70 years ago, you know, the closest British equivalent, if you like, of Roswell was the famous Rendlesham Forest case of December 1980. Now, December 1980, you know, not that long ago, it's only 34 years ago, and a lot of the guys involved were only sort of 19, 20, 21 back then. So those guys are, you know, for the most part, if not completely, all still around. They're mainly sort of early 50s now, or maybe mid-50s at the most. And many of the official papers relative to the Rendlesham story have gone. One story that I talk about in the book that I think most people won't know anything about is that in the Rendlesham event itself occurred over the 26th to the 28th of December 1980. And within the Rendlesham research field, there have been a lot of rumors over the years that at the height of the encounters, three prisons in the near vicinity of the forest were primed for evacuation because of some event involving national security, like a national emergency. And given the close proximity of the prisons to the base and to the forest and the time frame and everything else, this is sort of the assumption is that the planned evacuation of the prisons was somehow linked to the UFO event in ways we don't necessarily understand fully. Now, one of these prisons was called High Point Prison. And about 10 or 12 years ago, Lord Hill Norton, who was a former high-ranking member of the British Ministry of Defence and actually a former chief of the defence staff, he got interested in Rendlesham. And he got very interested in this story about the supposed prison evacuations. And he actually tried to get hold of the governor's logbook for December 1980, the High Point Prison, to see if it contained anything relative to the UFO events and this story of an evacuation. And so he asked that the logbook be declassified so he could see it. And the government of the day got back to him and said, well, we're not able to give you or show you the governor's logbook because it's disappeared. And, you know, all the other logbooks from 1979, for all the rest of 1980, for 81, 82, they were all there. But the logbook for December 1980 was gone. And just like Roswell, just like with JFK, nobody could figure out who had gone in and removed the logbook, where it was, had it been destroyed, had somebody stole it. It was as much a mystery, you know, as the case itself, almost.
Yeah. It seems to me that there have been entirely too many missing things, like what we've talked about recently. And nobody seems to know why they were missing, how they got there, who would be responsible for it. In other words, there never really seems to be a public investigation by anyone with some authority. Now, maybe there are some exceptions to that, but most of the time it just seems like it's passed over and people hope it'll go away, but it does go away.
Yeah, and
so I think it's one of the good things that you do is bringing up these things and looking at them from a new angle and looking at it. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. No, what I was just going to add was, you know, when you look at all these stories about files going missing from the U.S. military in relation to Roswell and documents vanishing in relation to the Rendlesham Forest case, my personal view is that we're not just looking at like a secret agency in the U.S. that oversees Roswell. I think we could be looking at an entire, like an international agency or an international sort of secret elite group of people, you know, that have strands in maybe in pretty much every country, you know, and unbeknownst to the elected leaders, they exist in every country. And their job is, you know, they have regular jobs, but they also get recruited into these off-the-record organizations or this worldwide organization, kind of like the equivalent of, you know, a very old sort of powerful order or body that existed but still does, you know, and their agenda is to keep the wraps on it, but they do so by infiltrating the official world. So again, you know, there may be an infiltration of the British Ministry of Defense in the same way there may be an infiltration of the Pentagon. In other words, it's not the Pentagon, it's not the Ministry of Defense that's doing this. It's somebody in their midst, if you like, that is working against them even, you know, to keep all this hidden. And I think when you see, as I point out in the book as well, files have vanished from Australia on UFOs, from the UK, from Canada, from the US, you begin to see a pattern where it's clearly not coincidence and there seems to be very powerful people who are able to oversee all this and, you know, just grab this material when they want it.
So if ETs or extraterrestrial UFOs, or even interdimensional, I guess, there is, to me, apparently, at least some circumstantial evidence that they're working in tandem with not just one government, but several. How do you feel about that? You think
well,
I'm on the right track here?
Yeah. In terms of several, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. I think, you know, the whole issue itself is sort of made up of numerous components. You know, whether it's the types of creatures that are coming here, the places they're coming from, the agendas, the official involvement with different groups organizing things and planning things or manipulating things. You know, the word several can, applies to just about every aspect of the phenomenon, whether what it wants with us or how we deal with it or who's hiding it. You know, the whole thing isn't just, it's just one agency hiding things and it's just one group coming in. It's in one place. No, it's all far more complex than that.
We're talking with Nick Redfern, and next hour our guest will be Mary Sutherland, and she's going to talk about her new book, which is all about the red-haired giants who have disappeared. And so, Nick, you've done a lot of research of weird beings and things like that. What's you know, I guess most of it gets traced back to cryptozoology, but is there anything that jumps out at you or over the years you've on this subject? Because, you've investigated a lot of things, from ghosts to strange creatures in the night.
Well, yeah, I mean, I try. There's a lot of things I'm interested in, but there's also a lot of things I'm not that interested in. You know, ghosts and hauntings don't really interest me that much, but cryptozoology does and UFOs do. And one of the interesting things I've sort of found over the years is there are a number of cases where certain aspects of cryptozoology and ufology cross paths. That's to say, there are some cases where people have seen UFOs at the same time frame and same place where Bigfoot-type creatures have been seen. A friend of mine named Stan Gordon wrote a very good book called Silent Invasion, which dealt with a wave of Bigfoot / UFO activity in Pennsylvania in 73, where you had reports of like these large, hairy, giant creatures having been seen at the same time of in woods and forests where these strange lights were seen flitting through the woods. And the creatures reportedly were vanishing in like a flash of light or just fading away or just, you know, suddenly winking out of existence as if they were kind of like interdimensional. And, of course, when you bring UFOs and Bigfoot into the same angle, so to speak, it creates a lot of controversy. And a lot of the UFO people don't like to admit to touch the Bigfoot stuff. And a lot of Bigfoot people try to keep the UFO subject out. But for me, you know, if that's what the witnesses said, you've got to follow up what they say, because the witnesses are the most important people in the subject. Without them, you know, we've got nothing. So I find that kind of fascinating, you know, that some of these crypto creatures could actually be somehow linked with the UFO phenomenon as well.
Yeah, and Stan Gordon has some interesting stories about things that happened up in Pennsylvania involving strange beings that suddenly just disappear or look like they're, I mean, it goes on and on. We're going to have Stan on again here pretty soon. So you were with him recently, huh?
Yeah, I've done a lot of research sort of just recently into, you know, this sort of ongoing research. I mean, I'm always getting sort of stories. In fact, Stan himself sent me one today, sort of a new roundup of all his UFO and Bigfoot stuff. That was kind of ironic that came through this morning. So, you know, I think one of the problems is, you know, when we go back to when you said about belief systems and UFOs earlier, it's the same thing that kind of affects the cryptozoology community, that so many people think, you know, Bigfoot is just an unknown ape, the Loch Ness monsters are plesiosaurs, and so on, you know, and a lot of people, you know, they simply will not touch this weirder aspect, but, you know, the weirder stories exist, so we really, the responsibility is on us to look into them. And that's like what Stan does. You know, Stan, I think to his credit, came to realize that Bigfoot is weirder than just an unknown ape. It's not just a North American equivalent of like an African gorilla. There's something strange about it. You know, and people disagree with Stan, but he stood by on his own ground, you know, on his own feet and said, nope, this is what's going on, and put out a book about it. And it was a good one as well.
We're about out of time with Nick Redfern, and we always appreciate you coming on, Nick. You have any closing comments or want to talk about something that we've left out that you cover in the book, or give us a little hint about what you're working on now?
Well, I mean, I just say that, you know, even from my own perspective, I've not really sort of having delved into the issue of missing files before. You know, even I was kind of amazed at the sheer number of files that, not just that they've gone missing, but that they've gone missing so easily. And even under the eyes of, like, the archivists, whose job it was to preserve them. You know, even the archivists couldn't figure out how the material had sort of leaked or been, you know, pulled and destroyed or shredded or basically stolen and taken to, you know, the heart of some unacknowledged agency or whatever. And when you find it happening all around the world, as I note in the book, then that's why I said I think it's outside the loop of elected government. I really do think there's, you know, people talk about sort of the Illuminati and groups like that. I actually think the whole UFO thing and these strands and tentacles operating all around the world, I think it's kind of linked to something like that, like an ancient order that has inherited the UFO phenomenon, and they're the ones who, you know, have the control. And everybody's knocking on the door of the Pentagon or the CIA or the Air Force and saying, you're the bad guys, release all the files. And the Air Force are saying, well, we don't actually have them. And they really are telling the truth. You know, they're not lying, I don't believe. But again, the problem is to identify them. But, you know, if at least we can show the files have gone, then that may give us sort of some inroad as to where we go next to try and find them, you know.
Well, Nick Redfern, thanks for being on tonight. And the name of the book is For Nobody's Eyes Only. And it's available just about everywhere.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Jerry. Thank you a lot.
Appreciate it very much. Now, on March 3rd, our guest will be Jim Mars. March 10th will be Paula Harris. And I think you'll... you'll enjoy both of those interviews. In fact, I know you will. And Jim's subject, he's got a new book out about it with lots of evidence on the elites, the super rich, the blue bloods of the world, and how they've made communion with extraterrestrial people or beings or whatever you want to call them, forces, I guess would be the best term. And these extraterrestrial forces are working in conjunction with the powers that be on Earth, and it's not for the common good of human beings at all. So I think this is a show you won't want to miss at all. And if you got the emails, any comments or anything like that, feel free to write us at jerry@jerrypippin.com. And we'd love to hear from you. We try to answer all of them.